5 p.m. on May 4th, 2021, and I will call to order the Pacific City Joint Water and Sanitary Authority Board of Directors Business Meeting. I'll call the roll. Before I do that, I should say we're meeting video via video teleconference call with BlueJeans. I'll call the roll. Ann Price.
Here.
Cameron Bogus.
Here.
Tom Donahue.
Here.
John Carlton.
Here.
For the record, all directors are present. Thank you. Item 3A, the business meeting minutes of April 6, 2021. Are there any corrections to the minutes?
Hearing none, I'll move that we approve the meeting minutes from the April 6, 2021 business meeting.
I'll second.
It has been moved and seconded that we approve the business meeting minutes of April 6, 2021. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And raise your hands so I can see, please. Thank you. The minutes have been approved unanimously. Item 4A, the accounts payable for April 6th, April 15th, and April 30th of 2021. Any questions on the accounts payable? Tom?
I do have a couple this evening. On April 6th, there was a $7,000 charge for Owens Pump and Equipment for a lift station pump. We have more than one lift station, I believe. Where was this located? This replacement, where was it located from?
Michelle, your audio is off.
Thank you, and I was asking for Ray's help. I saw the invoice, I signed up on the invoice, and I can't remember the lift station.
How many, just out of curiosity, how many lift stations do we have approximately?
There are 9 lift stations. 10 lift stations, excuse me.
What other equipment besides the pump was replaced? It was a pretty healthy bill, I imagine. Some of it was labor.
A pump can be at least $7,000.
Oh, I didn't realize they were that expensive.
They are, and in fact, the lift stations that we've done, the SCADA for next year, those pumps will be replaced, and we're looking at because some are bigger than others, I think we're budgeting for $70,000 to $80,000.
Wow. My last question was April 15th, DEQ Northwest Region, there was a $3,000 payment to them, and it says annual NDES permit. What does NEVES stand for?
Of course you're going to ask me that. I don't think I can get it to you right off the top of my head. I've looked at it too many times, but can I get you a copy of that permit?
Well, kind of what's it for?
It's our annual DEQ permit. We have to have it. We pay for it every single year.
It allows us to operate? Is that kind of...
That's correct.
Okay.
How many permits do we have to renew?
Well, this is the only one that we have to renew on the DEQ side. We do have a water permit that we have to renew, but this is the big one.
The big one.
That's all I have, Chair.
Thank you. I will get you that acronym.
Thank you.
Hey, Tom.
Cameron, yes.
Yeah, I had talked to Rochelle about this, and we, earlier, probably before you were in, we were talking about the how our lift stations, what kind of shape they were in, and we've gotten how many years out of all those pumps that we had. We haven't replaced anything, and now it's kind of cycling around, and we're probably going to get hit with probably maybe 9 or all 10 of them that haven't been done.
Correct.
Michelle, did this one just break down, or was it scheduled, or?
Boy, I wish I could get Ray on the phone.
Is that Ray that's
on? My mic on?
Yeah, his mic's not on. They're all being scheduled. So we have a schedule with the pump company, Owens Pump, to replace all of them.
Okay, that was just nothing new to me, so I was curious.
No, no problem. Yes, it is a maintenance, but it's not annual.
John?
National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
John Burrow.
Any other questions on the payables? Hearing none, I'll move that we approve the accounts payable for April 6th, April 15th, and April 30th of 2021.
I'll second.
It has been moved and seconded that we approve the accounts payable for April 6th, April 15th, and April 30th of 2021. All in favor say aye and raise your
aye.
Hand.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you. Item 4B, the fiscal year report. Any questions for the authority manager? All right. Hearing none, we'll move on to the manager's report. Michelle, the floor is yours.
Thank you. First of all, no permit or monitoring violations. The couple of things that I do want to mention, Springbrook, the upgrade went through and it was without any major hiccups. It's great, we're using it now. We're running, everything's fine. We were down for 2 days, but all of the customers understood and all of the payments and everything came in right after that, so we're great. The Northwest Engineering Service, this is a survey. We had somebody come down and survey the air quality within the building. And I attached the report for you, but basically what they're saying is that we're just recirculating air in the building. We have no outdoor air coming in. We have no air in the manager's office for Leonard because he's using it. And the conference rooms. So we either live with that like we have for 20 some years, or we go out and talk to HVAC engineering firms, not actual engineers, but to look at our system and give us a bid on adding outdoor air. And our furnace that's in the ceiling is a good avenue to get outdoor air through the ceiling to the furnace to us. But we also need to look at the furnace, which is probably since the remodel was done in 1998. 99. It was before my time. So how big of a concern is it to the board? We've lived with it for 20 some years.
Tom, please go ahead.
Michelle, we did some upgrades here in the last few years for the office. Are there any plans for adding rooms or anything like that in the next 5 years or so?
No.
Dan? Oh, I'm just curious, looking at the recommendations and hearing what you just said, Michelle, would there be a cost factor to a review by an HVAC consultant or engineer?
Probably not. What I would do is probably just send it out to bid to find out what their recommendations are to change out the furnace and bring in recirculating actual air. That way we could find out what the cost. I mean, if they're going to bid it, they're going to examine it. Man, bids are free.
Okay, because I'm concerned about the health of the employees in the building. I'm also concerned about the age of the current equipment
right.
that we have. But I don't think there's any way, at least I would feel comfortable moving forward to make the recommendations happen until we had some concept of exactly what would be involved and what the costs would be.
Right. I'm asking, do you want me to go forward and get the costs and talk to HVAC people and find out what it would cost to bring that in?
Personally, I'm feeling as though, as long as it doesn't obligate us in any way, I think that would be a prudent thing to do, because a lot of our responsibility is to look further down the road than next year. So,
sure.
So I think we've raised the issue. We've had a study done. It's valuable information, and I think that would be the next logical follow-up. Yeah. Cameron?
Yeah, Michelle, that system also makes sure that our computer systems and all that stuff stays cool or regulated, or
No.
Is it
effective? We have no air conditioning. We only have heat.
So how hot does it get in that computer room?
It's open most of the time. I would say I don't think it ever gets over 85. It's pretty solid in there.
And then what about when you guys do all the testing and stuff on the other side of the conference room? Isn't there any regulatory, a type of ventilation that you guys should have in there just in case something goes wrong, God forbid,
No.
So there's nothing
we don't have any chemicals in there that would compromise
that room. Oh, okay. That's all stored outside and out in the yard and stuff.
Right.
Which
we
is all
for testing.
It's all self-contained and stuff like that.
Yes.
Now, do we change filters monthly or quarterly? Do you have filters that are changed on our system at all?
Well, we're talking about the heater upstairs, the furnace. We change it once a year. That's the only thing we're talking about.
It's just one filter?
Yeah.
The last question was basically what I had in mind. If we had any kind of special filtration or anything, HEPA or other, so this is the original furnace with nothing special.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Michelle, is it my understanding with the OSHA rules around COVID that they are recommending that the air exchange in offices is 4 to 6 times an hour?
Yes.
And that needs to include fresh air intake?
It does include fresh air intake, yes, absolutely. So this is why we have the survey done in the first place.
And that we also need to also set, if we're going to make any changes, it also needs to be a CO2, an ability to read CO2, which gives us an indication of whether or not we're actually exchanging air.
I'm not sure about that, Carolyn. I could check, but I'm not sure that we have to monitor that.
Okay.
On a daily, monthly basis. I'm not aware of that.
So what I'm reading in the research at this point is that if we're thinking about opening up in the next couple of months and thinking about having customers come in, that in order to keep our staff safe, we've got to have clean air coming in from the outside.
Correct.
And it's going to be a challenge in terms of where we get that clean air, given that we're close to the road and we've got a wastewater treatment plant right there. And also that we'll have that air contained at a certain level in order to have safety for staff.
Yes.
All
I'll just take it the next step and just find out what's available and what the recommendations are.
Great, thank you.
Okay, so we were supposed to have our alarms tested on May 3rd. That didn't happen. Not sure why they didn't show up, but we will figure that out. We did have a CPR class today, and all were in attendance except Leonard, who was with Paul Manufacturing out of Horn Creek, testing the system out there, and myself in the office answering phones and taking care of customers. The fence project, this is kind of my fault. There's been confusion whether it was May 4th or May 11th. I talked to them this morning. They'll be here next Tuesday. And the last thing is the fridge report, and I got a final email late yesterday afternoon. I just want you to know that the Woods Bridge is, there's no concerns, there's no near-term considerations, and the replacement is 25 to 30 years. The Slough Bridge is near-term, in 2 to 5 years, replace a couple of support rollers, no big deal. 15 to 20 years is to replace the pipe and fittings. The one that most concerned them is the Beachy Bridge, what they're calling Pacific Avenue Bridge. Because of the salt air being so close to it, we have some megalugs, which are actual items holding the pipes together, that they want us to remove and replace them within a year or two. Long term, 20, 25 years, we'll be replacing the lines. So the only concern they had whatsoever was to replace these megalug and replace them with a different kind of hardware. And so the report was great as far as we're concerned. I was really pleased that there is no concerns about the pipes going over the bridge or supplying water and sewer across the bridge. Just replacing a couple of connectors and we should be good.
Michelle?
You know, I have on the manager's report, Renette.
Cameron, did you have a question?
Sure. Michelle, you're talking about those megalugs. Are those also used on the bridge in Woods and the one here at the Slough Bridge?
No, they're different. They're different connectors. They're not all the same, no. The megalugs were put in on the Beachy Bridge, but they're not being used on the Slough Bridge, as far as I can tell. And the Woods Bridge is different as well.
So there's not near the rust corrosion?
Well, no, and it's further inland. The Slough is off the ocean air a little bit, and the Woods is, you know, obviously further in.
So is this a job that we could do, or is it has to be something that's contracted out?
No, we can do it.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Michelle, reading your report, you mentioned that vaccines for COVID are available for all who want it.
Yes.
I referenced that in the comment you made last month about that we can't require them to take the vaccine.
That's correct.
I pointed out that the Special District Association's latest magazine. That was a very common question, evidently, to them. And the bottom line is, the answer is yes, we can require them to take the vaccine. However, considering that the pandemic is tapering off, we're using best practices, as far as dealing with the public, I would recommend that we don't do that. We don't force our employees to get vaccination.
Tom, is that the report that came out today?
Now, this is the SDAO. Magazine, Spring 2021 News and Risk Management Review.
Okay, I would really like to know what ORS or what rule they're suggesting, because everything I have researched says I cannot make it mandatory. But I agree with you, I'm not going to, unless it's by law.
Well, like I say, this is an Oregon organization, and...
I'll get a hold of that magazine. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, but I think it's, you don't need to do it. I mean, this thing is tapering off, and as long as none of our employees contract the disease, I think we're okay.
Thank
well,
you.
Won't that be something we'd have to revisit if, you know, we do have a problem?
Well, my only concern was that the authority would be liable for suit if one of our employees either we proved negligence by not, you know, if they had the disease and gave it to someone else, and we're a public agency, we have to have, when someone, we hire someone, they have to have a medical exam and that sort of thing. I think a litigator could make a good case there. But once again, my feeling is this thing is tapering off. We're using best practices. So it's I don't think we need to require our employees to do that. And just to make sure that we just follow what OSHA and the state says we're supposed to.
Cameron?
You know, Tom, that, you kind of bring up a point. You know, we're going to be hiring a couple of employees. Is it going to be a requirement that we have them do a COVID test? I mean, at the new, where does that lie?
They're supposed to have a medical test. That's all I know. I don't know if it'd be common practice to do that in today's environment, but, you know, that would... I don't know. It's not. I don't know what the requirements are to hire someone as far as medical compatibility to do the job.
Well, it's a full physical that makes sure that they are capable of doing the job, and I'm sure that that's going to be asked. They're going to have their temperature taken. They're going to be asked questions about it. So I'm not concerned there.
Okay. It was just like we're kind of venturing down a new avenue with all this COVID stuff, and which way do you go, and how do you cover the district and our employees? And, you know,
John.
Yeah. So far, the state has very deliberately punted on this. They're trying very hard not to force anybody into requiring vaccines. So what you're starting to see is now some of the universities are requiring their students to have vaccinations by the fall, but they're also not requiring their staff to have vaccinations for fall term. So the state is very much punting on this.
It's new territory for all of us, and I think it'll be a while before we come to exact conclusions. The data that I've seen said that at the workplace, if you have someone that has not been vaccinated, then social distancing rules and masks need to be continued until everybody is vaccinated. And I hope that we can look at this rather than someone saying they're not going to be vaccinated, is that they haven't made up their mind at this point, because there's still, for some people, it's very valid to not understand or not having had the time to read or know the benefits of this for them and their families. And I think we need to give everybody an opportunity to make that decision on their own before otherwise. Yes, Cameron?
You know, this is gonna, how are we gonna, eventually we're gonna open up, people are gonna wanna know when they can come to a board meeting, and we're going to have to come up with where we stand and have it presented, or have it put it in paper with Tim of when we do open, this is what we're requiring if you want to do come to our meetings or when we do reopen.
We do have two different issues. We have the opening of the office, and we have public attendance and getting together for board meetings. At this point, the governor's emergency order has been extended through the end of June, I believe.
Right.
And so this is something that maybe in another month at our next meeting we'll have some better clarity on and could take a look at where we might head.
How to address that.
Right.
Okay. We'll just have it on the agenda.
Tom?
One last thing for Michelle. In your report, you got the graphs back again. Thank you very much for those. They're darn helpful. And as per a question I had last month about the new water meters and the comments from the new report out by our engineers that our water report, that our 10-year master plan, that we were losing water somewhere between water produced and water billed or water actually metered at homes. And the meters were supposed to, they figured were part of that. And I was looking at the charts, and I realized, you know, we haven't got everything flopped yet, but the water produced and the water bill were, according to this, both of them were about 80,000 cubic feet. I didn't see any loss there. Do you think that's because of the meters, or is that an anomaly?
That's an anomaly. No, we're not. No, we won't know for sure for another month or two. We had, that was the first month that we actually ran a billing off true meter reads with the equipment, and we still had to read a majority, we still had to read a third of them by hand, and we had issues with scanning some of the meters. It took us a while. I would give it another month or two. I mean, I think next month will be much more accurate, but I think a month after that, we're dialed in.
Kind of getting the bugs out?
Give us some time. Yeah, getting the bugs out.
I think it'd be once we get her settled down, I think it's a good point to point out to the public that users are paying themselves with more accurate data.
Sorry, somebody's got a radio or something going.
I do agree that they are more accurate. We still have about 200 meters that we have to install, though, still, so we're not going to have a completely accurate reading next month.
Right. It's going to take a couple of months. But I think that we'll see an improvement, even if we have 100 or 150 that we read by hand. Mm-hmm. We'll still see an improvement. But we are trying our best to spend every spare moment we have installing new meters where we can.
So, Michelle, what's your plan as far as how many meters? You say we have like 200. When will we have those knocked out? And will we still have bugs with those?
No, we won't have bugs with those. We got through the bugs of the system. I think when those new meters are installed, they're installed by us, we're going to be done correctly the first time. So they'll be done by the end of summer for sure, but I'm hoping to get them done by the end of June.
Things come up. I know my neighbor across the street, you had called him, and I'll tell you what, he tore up his yard looking for the leak. And where it happened to be, it was in the toilets. His toilets were leaking. And a lot of people don't realize that their toilets, you know, you don't hear them or whatever, but
it's a lot of water.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, it drove him crazy. Now Tracy's getting a new floor out of the upstairs.
Oh, good for Tracy.
Yeah. But, yeah, it finally took that of the check in the toilet. I mean, he dug up his whole yard. Yeah, so. I do like his reports, though, the flow.
Thank you.
Michelle, I have a quick question on one of the charts. The unaccounted for water percent.
Yeah.
Is that now 2019, 2020,
2021? Are you on page 3 of the charts?
Yes,
you're correct. There is a rough on the bottom.
Yeah, that was inherited from your predecessor.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for letting me know.
Anything else on the manager's report?
Not for me.
Okay, any other comments from board members on the manager's report? All right. We'll go to unfinished business, and the first item underneath unfinished business is what we are calling our HR assessment. And for the record, just to summarize for the board, the board requested that we get information and opinion from counsel. I emailed Katie Tank to inform her what the situation was and what we were looking at doing, and asked her some questions and then had a conversation with her. And her response was that it's a bad idea and bad policy to have the board go in and discuss with staff, that if we're interested in getting information from staff, that we need to have a professional do it. She saw a couple of issues with it. They said that while it was very well intentioned, the board members to do something, that it is something that can put the organization in a legal bind, because the board members at that point are acting as the organization. And she said that it can easily backfire. She said, in addition, that having the board members go in and question staff destroys the chain of command, that at that point it appears and the board is circumventing the authority manager in the process and undermining the authority of that position. She says that she, in her work, not only for organizations, but also as a board member on nonprofits and other organizations, has seen that be a very slippery slope where the board, once they do something like that, tend to want to get more involved in the administrative parts of the organization as opposed to staying in their policy role. She recommended that we didn't wade into the weeds, that we focus on forward-looking issues and actions, and that if we felt the need to do something, that some type of anonymous employee survey or having an HR person come in, as we've discussed, would be a good thing to do. The board, we have talked in the past about having Ryan Fleming from HR Solutions come in to do this kind of work, and we have had conversations with him. Unfortunately, he wasn't available to do it right away. He still will be happy to work with us when he becomes available. And that's my status report for the board at this point. Are there any questions? Yes, Tom?
Obviously, our main concern was to find out what happened. And yes, I agree that we need to have some HR input here, and appreciate your contacting Katie. It is my understanding she used to work for Williamson's and the our regular legal counsel, but she's independent now. Is that correct?
She is independent, yes.
But thank you for that. Part of the problem here is the chain of command broke down, There is, and we cannot get HR information in a timely manner, which brings me back to a suggestion I made a month or so ago about an HR person on staff. And there was objections from our authority manager. Unfortunately, that direction that we needed from a professional has not been available. So I'm going to make a suggestion that we find another HR consultant giving us timely advice. I mean, it's been 3 months almost.
And it's been just two, Tom.
Well, seems like it.
I agree.
So the recommendation from our legal consultant was that an anonymous survey, as far as an HR assessment is concerned, I understand the legal ramifications. I understand our place as board members. But considering the fact that our staff feels or felt, and I'm assuming here, Shell, I think you were one of those folks, you wanted to give a, when you were planning on retiring, to have an exit interview, and I've been real curious to find out what you might have said, but considering half the staff was going to quit, I think there's a couple of things here that we have to consider. And I kind of have a feeling what happened here, but it's so much guesswork that an anonymous inquiry to the staff might be the way to go, as suggested by the legal counsel. However, personally, having experience working in a public environment myself, I think one of the things that all of the folks that were thinking of quitting, who were totally ticked off at the whole situation, is that they felt that they could probably get a job elsewhere with, you know, no problem. And that brings us to our problem of hiring new people right now. And that's, you know, getting to be a real serious question, and I think one of the contributing factors that folks wanted to quit and are trouble in finding new people is pay equity. And I know that in the past, or it's my understanding that in the past we have looked at what we pay our employees up and down the coast, but our employees have to have the same credentials, whether they live in, if you lived in Ontario or Klamath Falls or Bend or Portland or Medford. And I think instead of just looking at just the coast for our employees, that it might not be a bad idea to look at pay equity from a valley too, especially the larger organizations, because if our employees really were mad, I know they love working here, that sort of thing, but if they were really upset, I want to avoid this kind of a problem here. I think that we ought to at least inquire as to what the larger organizations in the Valley pay. I commuted to the Valley for over 15 years in my previous job, and bottom line is $70,000-$80,000 a year jobs just don't exist here on the coast, but they do an hour away. So I think, considering what's happened in the past, I'd like to recommend that we look at pay equity as something to help our employees, as well as to be able to help us in recruitment.
Yeah.
You talked about a number of things, Tom, and I appreciate your opinion. Let's hear from other people about the issue with regards to the HR assessment and where we are with the legal opinion, and then we'll remind us and we'll come back to some of the other points that you brought up, if I may. Cameron?
Every time we talk about that, it just brings up how upset this whole thing has been, and that I still feel that we let people down. You know, I wish that would have been able to talk to us, or I'm sure they talked to somebody, or that it wasn't brought to our attention much sooner so we could have at least done something. I'm really concerned about having a big walkout where it's going to leave us. The employee, I know they love this community, they love their job, and I know they take ownership that this is their water system and their sewer system. They care about it beyond compare, you know.
That's true, and if I can keep you focused on the HR part and the legal counsel rather than going back to the story, I appreciate it.
But that's how we got to get there. We've got to figure this out. We can't make the same mistake again twice. I hate that. Let's learn from it. Let's fix it. And let's make things better so that our employees do trust us to be able to come to us.
That's a good point, Cameron, because
we're going to be getting a new manager, possibly new employees, and here we are going to start all over again. And then if the trust with our senior employees, with the new manager, and then the trust with Ray, he's retiring, and that's going to open up another position there, and it's got to be the trust factor. We can't make the same mistake twice. And it's sad that it has happened. But learn from our mistakes. But I still would like to be able to find out from HR or whatever. I get those on my email from HR consultants and risk stuff. Is there any way that we can contact one of those people to maybe? Since Ryan seems to be pretty busy, he's a busy guy, and I don't know if Katie Tank, is that her specialty, or if she does that kind of stuff?
Katie Tank is a lawyer.
Okay.
She specializes in employment law. That's one of the reasons that we went to her.
Right.
With regards to what Katie had told us, is she believed that we were 80% having solved our problem with the decisions that we made. We went forward and accepted a resignation. We have hired a new interim authority manager. And none of our employees have left. We're now looking at working with an HR specialist to collect confidential and anonymous information from staff that would give us insight to better best practices.
So are we going to have the employees go ahead and go forth and give information, or just not do anything? It's a big hurdle. How many are going to come forth? They get it before, and are they going to do it now?
I don't understand what you said, Cameron. Could you repeat that?
Well, the employees didn't come forward from having a problem last time. Who's to say that it comes down to trust. Who do they trust? Are they going to trust an outsider coming in? And it's like, we go through this, the motions, but nothing changes.
You propose something different? Try and follow best practices, and best practices is to follow the recommendation of consultants and legal counsel, and that's exactly what we're doing.
Well, we need a new consultant, I think, because he's not available when we need him. We need some kind of, I want to get on the phone, what the heck are we supposed to do here? Kind of consult that, well, I can't make it this week, I can't make it this month, the times are tough, I don't want to hear excuses on it, but I need some advice from a professional. I need it right now. I think we ought to shop for a new consultant, but I think.
Ann? I think we've gotten a pretty clear message from our legal advisor, and I appreciate her extensive background, and it sounds like we're all kind of appreciating her advice and taking that seriously, which we truly need to do. It would not be good practice to get legal advice and then ignore it. So we're not doing that. That's a good thing. As to the HR advisor, I don't share. I have two concerns. One concern is I'm hearing a lot of speculation amongst my fellow board members on what people's opinions were and why they thought about doing what they were doing. And I just want to emphasize that is speculation. And until we go through the process with the HR and let that person do his or her work, that is how we answer those questions. I do not feel personally that it is an urgent, that it has to be done this week or next week or this month. I think Ryan Fleming has good background with us. I'm very impressed with the quality of his work. It's not a matter of his just not being available this week or next week. It was a family emergency, which could happen to any of us. And I think he has a commitment to us, and as soon as he's available, we'll be on his list of things to do as quickly as he can. And my expectation is that we used the word a couple of months ago in a meeting. We used the word investigation, and he does those kinds of investigations for a living. And I feel as though his expertise and his familiarity with us is worth the wait. We also have a search process underway, which is not going to resolve. We've already committed to involving staff more in the process this time, but that process is not going to be resolved for a few months. So I personally would like to see us take the lawyer's advice and stay in touch with Ryan, and I'm confident that we'll hear from Ryan as soon as he's available. Tom?
Ann, I respectfully disagree. We have a crisis here, and we need timely advice, and Ryan wasn't here when we needed it. I think that we ought to look for another HR consultant and get a fresh look at this from a different perspective. That I would go so far to make a motion that we have we investigate.
Tom, could I have you hold on your motion until we hear from Sean at least?
Fine.
Thank you. John, do you want to weigh in?
Your mic, John.
Sorry, I clicked it, but I guess I didn't click in the exact right spot. I disagree with Katie's response personally, but I understand it. I'm not surprised that was her response, given that she's an HR lawyer. But you know that's the legal advice that she gave. So I have a few suggestions. One, I don't think that we need a part-time HR staff member, but I do think that we need to have a retainer with an HR firm for HR consultations. And I would like to recommend that, at least in the short term, to make sure that we're sort of getting on track, that we set up some sort of a quarterly HR review with staff, where maybe on a quarterly basis we can have staff come in and interact with a HR consultant and talk about any concerns that they might have, or kind of act as a liaison between the board, the authority manager, and the staff, and get into a regular sort of input gathering, HR assessment, and especially in light of having a new authority manager come in sometime in the next year, I think it'd be good to have that scheduled on a quarterly basis. And if nobody wants to show up for it and talk to the HR consultant, fine, so be it. But rather than try to have one scheduled time that is more like an interrogation, have it be a quarterly thing that's going to happen every quarter no matter what, so it takes away some of the worry or the confrontation. Second of all, I'd like to suggest that we just change some of our tone a little bit. And I apologize if I've used this term myself, but I think maybe we should not use the term investigation. I like the HR assessment route. I think that it's just a little bit more diplomatic, and I hope that it is less threatening to our staff. I think using the term investigation is just a little harsh, and I'm not sure it's accurate, although I understand the intent of that word. I think it's important as we move forward with the authority manager search process that we are upfront that there will be staff input as part of the authority manager review process. I think it's really crucial that we have staff input in terms of the authority manager's review, and I think we should be upfront about it as we're searching for new candidates. Very much think that the board ought to investigate. The board ought to pursue having a workshop for the board on how the board can work well together and how we can sort of bring five different levels of craziness together and help the authority to navigate board members conflicting and different types of personalities. I think that would be very helpful. And I think that about wraps up my thought process.
Hey, Sean, and everybody else. And when I get emails to the water sewer as the board, and I got one from Katie Bennett, and there was an HR consultant that also sent me stuff. And this one from Katie Bennett was on 4/14/21, and it was workplace investigations and stuff. And she gives course, outlines of things. She had one on April 19th. But I think it'd be, like Sean says, maybe, yeah, let's get somebody in here to help us navigate through what had happened. Let's not forget about it. Let's learn by it and move on and how can we fix it. And it's like Sean says, if the employees don't get involved, then that's too bad. But I think having HR person on retainer is a good idea, because that HR person is going to be an advocate for the employees.
Ann? I appreciated your comments, all of you. And Sean, I completely agree with the difference between the words investigation and assessment. We use the term assessment in most of our discussions. I think the concept of investigation came out of a conversation when we were talking about Ryan, and he was at the time busy doing investigations. And I think that's where that word crept into our conversation. So, and as I recall, there was some of my fellow board members were quite enamored with the idea of an investigation. Because I think we all genuinely feel as though all these things that have been said, I think we probably all agree with that we don't we don't want to find ourselves in this same position another time. But I do think our original concept of an assessment is the right place to be. And I do think that an HR professional is essential in the process, because we have a staff that reports to an authority manager, and for some of the comments that I had in front of me, the email from Katie, some of the comments that she made about the board's role is policy making. It is not administration. And so so it really isn't appropriate on some levels for the board to be, as she put better than I am in her email, it's not appropriate for the board to be interacting directly with individual staff members on these questions. So I think as she wound up her email, as Carolyn read, we're 80% there in that we have a framework for working with an HR professional to do an assessment and provide information that's gathered from staff. I think that will go a long way to answering some of our board concerns and helping the board move forward with future decisions. So, and I just say again, I feel as though we're on the right path, and I would like to just be a little more patient and take a little more time and see what we hear from Ryan, because again, I do feel as though we have an established relationship with him already. I think his services have served us extremely well in the past. We also had experience with at least one other HR person that the board, I don't know, I can't remember the details, but we ended up wanting to find somebody else. So, but I feel as though we're in a good place. We just need to give it a little bit more time to find out what Ryan's schedule is, and revisit the question next month at our meeting. And we may have information by then that will answer some of the questions that are being raised tonight.
Tom, I know you've got your hand up. Do you mind if I comment first?
Go ahead.
Thank you. I appreciate the comments, and I'm in agreement that it took us quite a while to find Ryan Fleming and to feel confident in the skills and abilities that we identified. And I think that we've been, over the years, we've done a really good job of identifying consultants, talking with them, and choosing not to go back to those that have not provided the excellent service that we expect for our employees and the community. And I have a lot of confidence in Ryan thus far, and I think he's been a good listener. He's given us good advice, and I think that the staff would respond very well to him. And I think that given that he has worked with us before, that he already has a lot of background information and individual conversations with most, if not all, of us here on the board, that would be put him further ahead and give us a better end product. So it would be my suggestion that we wait for him on that. With regards to the staff input on the authority manager evaluation process, I think Sean's correct. We need to find a way to make that happen and figure out how to do that. Ryan Fleming was the person that we worked with on completing the authority manager evaluation process, and I would like to see us re-engage him to figure out how to make that happen. I think that if we used him for the quote-unquote HR assessment, that given that experience, he will be better and more fully able to advise us specifically on how to make that happen. And he may even garner some information from employees during the process on how to best set that up for us. regarding Sean's recommendation on a workshop for the board with regards to communication and our similarities and our differences. We have used the SDAO consultant, Rob Mills, in the past for board assessments, and if the board is interested in that, we could certainly make a call to him and set up a workshop if that would be what the board would like. With regards to the suggestion at this point of setting up an HR quarterly review process, I do think that that would be one option, but I hate to go there immediately by pulling an HR consultant off out there and assigning them to do that, not having done the full assessment first and gathering that data and understanding exactly what it is we need to do. So I would support that, but only after our HR assessment. And personally, if Michelle is willing to share at this point, I think our staff is in a good place at this time. I have, on my daily walkabouts, had the occasion to just say hi to people, and my question is, so how's this going? And the responses I'm getting are very positive and enthusiastic to what I had gotten in, say, the few months prior to the resignation of our authority manager. Michelle, would you care to comment at all?
Well, I can tell you that I've had good rapport with the staff. They understand, they feel more comfortable. They actually are working extremely hard to make this work right now. I mean, I think they're working harder than I've seen them work in a long time. And I think that's just a mental stress relief for them to know that, first of all, they're being respected, and that was an issue before. They're being listened to, and they're thanking me, and they're agreeable, and we have meetings, and we discuss, and we talk about the day, and how the day is going to go, and who's going to do what. And I think, ask any one of them, I ask you to. I am pleased. I am extremely pleased. We've gotten so much more done in a month than we had in 6 months. We're working on all the projects that need to be done, and they point them out to me directly. I ask them, what do you want to work on this week? What do we need to do? What project needs to really get done? And they offer them up, and I say, okay, you're in charge. This is your project. You want it done, it's yours. And I couldn't be more pleased, seriously. And I think they are too. I think the respect is what they deserve and needed. And I'm happy to say that it's getting better by the day.
Thank you. Tom, I'll come back to you, and then Cameron.
Okay, well, Michelle, I'm really happy to hear that. I've been very, very concerned about how this thing came about, and as policymakers, we dropped the ball in that there was not only a perception of nobody to go to because of the way our chain of command is set up. In a larger organization that does have an HR department, the HR folks are not only advising management, and as I mentioned before, they're the advocates for employees. So if you got a gripe against your boss, you go to HR. If you're disrespected, you go to HR. So,
right. And I have a response to that. I have an employee who did go to a director, and I told them to go to a director. If they want to talk to somebody, choose your director. Go speak to them and let them know how you feel. And they did. And it's between them. I am not holding anybody got from talking to any particular director.
That's wonderful.
I do want the directors to also know that it's a two-way street, that they should come to me if they want to talk to me about a particular person or a particular situation. I'd be happy to help. And if they want an employee in that conversation, it's up to the employee. It's absolutely up to the employee. If they want to talk about it, let's talk about it. I'm
glad to hear that. I really am, because I think the problem was that there wasn't an avenue. You are now providing that avenue.
It was in the handbook, so they didn't take the avenue. I took the avenue by calling Carolyn. But it was in the handbook. They had the right to do it. They just didn't feel comfortable doing it. And that's, I'm sorry to say, on all of us. It's on the board. It's on the manager. They need to be comfortable knowing that if they can't get something done, or if they have a complaint about me or any authority manager, that they have the right to go to a board member. And I want them to.
Well, that's good, because that didn't happen. Or at least
scared.
They were scared, I imagine. But whatever, as a policy, I kind of like Sean's idea of having...
I think it's great.
Every 3 months, every 4 months, I think there's now a line of communication that we didn't have before, and that was our problem. So that, I think, is a great idea also.
I do too. I'm in total agreement with it.
But you have what Carolyn says, that we're not supposed to talk to the employees.
It's up to the employee to come to you.
What's that?
It's up to the employee to come to you. And they would set it up through the manager. If they want to go see somebody, well, first of all, if they're really mad at me, they can just go. I mean, they know all your phone numbers. So, but second of all, I want them to.
Well,
they go to the director they want to. I don't want a director going to them.
Oh, no. But we have this, like, don't go to, it's between business and management and stuff. It just should be open. We're all human beings. And we're all here to help.
You set policy only. The manager runs the authority day-to-day business.
Yeah, but look what we had happen.
You can't do anything with listen and then go to the board.
Look what we had happen, Michelle.
I saw it.
It's sad. It really is. I hate that we went through this, but I certainly don't want this to happen again. And I think there should be an open communication. I really do. And it comes down to, and I was going to ask this on comments and stuff, isn't it in the board policy that the employees attend at least one board meeting? And how do they do that? I know Leonard's there and Ray's there, but the rest of them, how's the opportunity of these guys to be able to attend a board meeting?
It's up to them.
I thought that was in the policy.
No. Mr. Owen asked them to participate in one a year. That was it. He never made it mandatory, nor is it a function of their job.
Oh, I thought that it was.
No.
Well, it should be, I mean, if you know, it should be out there. Hey, you guys, we're having a board meeting tonight.
They know
Michelle is doing her job and doing it well.
Yeah. I just the opportunities. We've got to keep going out there. We've got to keep pouring out there. It's just, we're all human beings.
So,
we want to know what's going on. We want to fix it. Everybody in this here is concerned about our district. They care. We want to fix it and make it a better place. A great place to work. Fun place to work. Or whatever. I don't want to see this happen again, especially with us going to be hiring another manager. We got to find the right person.
Cameron, we hear you. We hear you loud and clear.
It's frustrating.
Okay. Michelle, coming back to you and the conversation that we've had, the board is has made comments about an HR, having an HR consultant on contract to give quarterly award some type of assessment. And mm-hmm. you have vocalized that you support that. So as the lead person, as the authority manager, it would be up to you to check that out if you are so inclined and to inform the board as to what you think is best for staff. I'm not sure there's a policy for us to set rather than your recommendation that this would be something that would be helpful and for you to find the person that you think would work best in that role.
I do believe it will satisfy the board as far as the direction of making sure that the staff is listened to and heard. I agree wholeheartedly that it's a good idea. It takes the pressure off the manager in some regards. I will go out and find three capable companies that are interested in that type of work specifically, and I will report back to the board.
Thank you. That sounds reasonable. So then the board has I didn't hear any objection to the staff input on the part of the authority manager evaluation process, and that we could go forward with working with Ryan Fleming on that piece when he's available again to work that into our process. Cameron?
Tom brought up a good point about the employees. I know it's been a long time since we've done the employee evaluation, our comprehensive wages up and down the district.
Can you hold on that until I'm through on these, these points? Thank you. So would the board like to pursue the process of staff input on part of the authority manager evaluation?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. John?
Yep.
Your song.
Sorry. We already have the framework. I mean, Ryan sent us a memo outlining how we would go about doing that and the kinds of types of questions that we might ask of our staff if we were interested in doing that. So, you know, I think that memo that he sent is perfectly valid, and so I think we just need to move forward with that.
Do you want to bring a proposal on how we do that back to the next board meeting then?
Sure.
Great, thank you. There had also been a suggestion on the a workshop regarding board communication. Does the board want to move forward with that with Rob Mills?
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. Does the board, we have a meeting in 2 weeks on budget, we start that process. Does the board want that to try to be the meeting with Rob Mills, the workshop with Rob Mills, to be scheduled during May if we can, or are we getting too many things on our plate? Tom?
That's fine with me. However, my other suggestion about pay equity,
Hang on. Can I get this finished and then we can go to pay equity?
Okay.
Thank you. So is May still good for everybody, or do you want to wait until June for that?
I prefer to wait until June just so we don't have too many things piling on at once.
Okay. Rochelle? Your mic? Got it.
Okay, I just want to remind the board you have a business meeting and a budget adoption in June, so you do have two meetings already.
What days are those?
The June business meeting is on the 1st, and then the budget adoption is going to be at the very end of the month.
I don't know that this has to be a super pressing issue. But I do think it's worthwhile doing and having on our radar.
All right. Why don't I contact Rob Mills and get some suggested dates from him with his schedule and come back to the board. Ann?
Just taking off of what Sean just said, you know, that this is, it may not have, it certainly doesn't have the urgency of the calendar that we have in place for the budget committee and out of respect for people's schedules. I think Sean's suggestion is a good one. It doesn't need to be done immediately, but it would be useful and helpful for all of us. So maybe after, sometime after the budget is done and put to bed, we could look at it and see what Rob's schedule is, of course.
All right. Michelle and then Tom?
You have time. I mean, you're not going to be evaluating and doing a manager's evaluation anytime soon. Hopefully I'm not getting one, so because I'm on my way out. So you have plenty of time. Just a little living.
Tom?
In reference to the budget, and unfortunately this whole debacle has kind of led us away from that priority. And because of it, however, my previous suggestion about pay equity, and I don't know if we even have enough time to address it before we look at the budget, but I'd like the board to keep in mind that I think this is something that we ought to at least kind of make some contingency funds available for the budget or something like this for the next year.
You know, Tom, that's a good point. In the budget, there's a couple of things. First of all, we have pay scales for each one of our positions, and we make sure that those pay scales are of enough depth to be able to raise salaries when it is due to merit and other issues that are on the board that are a part of that subject. And the second thing is we have a budget line item that's labeled merit, and that allows for, is that no longer there?
No.
Oh, okay, sorry.
No, sorry.
So
sorry.
That
went away. That was a fictitious.
Well, I'd like to point out that
there is plenty of money.
As far as merit is concerned, that we might also consider as far as compensation, pay for performance for individuals where if they've, you know, in their supervisor's opinion or in the authority manager's opinion, if an individual has met reasonable goals through the year that they are considered for a 1 or 2% a raise for any particular year. I don't know exactly how you do this, but the basic concept of pay for performance is a good thing, I think.
Tom, if my niece speak for just 1 second, when we go through the budget, I think I'll answer all of your questions. The budget's going to be up this Thursday, and I'd like to let everybody on the board know that if they'd like to talk to me in a meeting personally at the conference room or on the phone, you're more than welcome to call me and set up an appointment. And we can discuss any of the line items, and if you want to talk about payroll and personnel, I'm happy to go over with you and show you some of the items that we have plenty of room with.
Thank you.
I'll take you up on that.
Yes, thank you, Cameron. I hope to see you.
Really?
Well, I heard you were in the office today asking about it, so... Yeah, I'm really looking forward to helping us out and getting through it.
It really does help. You know, instead of looking at something, it helps. It just helps.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Anything else on the HR assessment? We got a little sidetracked, but I think we covered a lot of territory.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Item B, staffing. Michelle?
Let's make this short. We have nobody so far. We've had an applicant for the wastewater 3, not qualified whatsoever. We've had a couple of applicants for the operator in training. I have had Rochelle go through the resumes. I'm going to have Leonard look at them tomorrow, and we're going to call in, I think, 3, so that we can at least get an operator in training maybe going in the near future. That's it on that subject.
Thank you.
Ann? I was at the Road Advisory Committee meeting yesterday, and Chris Laity gave a description of the process of their attempting to hire people. They're specifically looking for people with CDLs, and they're getting no applicants at all. And we had a pretty thorough discussion about why. And I just bring that up just to reinforce the concept that, A, we are not alone, but the newspapers and news broadcasts are full of stories like this. Hiring anybody for any job right now is a major challenge.
I do have an applicant with CDL, so I'm looking forward to meeting with him.
Tom, go ahead.
Have we heard anything from Kaufman about our current situation?
Carolyn?
I thought you were looking for your email. Yes, we did get an email from Frothman, and basically he said we have 2 applicants to date. They are applicants that applied before that we had rejected, and he said it's too early to worry about it. He just wanted to keep us on top of things.
Thank you.
Now inquisitive minds wants to know who were the 2.
I don't have their names.
We don't have their names, and we wouldn't say anyway.
Thomas?
Yes, please, go ahead, Sean. I'm sorry.
The applicants that were rejected, were these applicants that we rejected, or were these applicants that didn't make Prothman's meeting process the last time around?
They're applicants that we rejected.
Okay. Thank you.
Next item under unfinished business, Horn Creek Internet. Michelle?
Well, this is a nightmare. We went to CenturyLink to get 10 megs, and they told us we could only have 3. So we turned that down, and we went back to Coastcom and said, yeah, we'll take your fiber optics at $450 a month. And they came back and said that line that's running on Old Woods Road, they did not know was proprietary, and that we couldn't have access to it. So, meaning that it's a Microsoft line or some other big. So, not done yet. Steven from Comcast went over and above the call of duty and went to a board meeting for Comcast as an employee to the WAVE. I'm getting the name confused. Ann, I can't hear you. I'd love to hear this.
Is it Tillamook Light WAVE? Because
Tillamook Light WAVE
fiber and all those lines.
Yes. So Steve went to Tillamook Light WAVE and told them our story and said that it's imperative that these people have high speed internet, that this is an important situation for their town. And it just so happens that the board of directors for the Tillamook Light WAVE are Doug Olson, David Yamamoto, and somebody I'm not familiar with. So they said it was really important that we have high speed internet at Horn Creek because they understand our situation. However, they haven't approved it yet. We're supposed to hear something this week. So I'm still waiting. It's been, fingers crossed, it's been 2 months. since we started this project, we're not done. We do have a Horn Creek server coming in by the end of June. So I can't do anything without internet. So it's a cat and mouse game right now. But we're hoping that the board of directors for Tillamook Lightwave will pass some ruling that we can attach to it.
I have a question, Michelle. Would it help the cause, our cause at all, if any of our board members were to attend the Tillamook Lightwave board meeting?
I don't think so. I mean, you could do that if you wanted to, and I just, they know the situation, and Doug Olson and David Yamamoto are 100% on our side. They know the situation, and Stephen wouldn't have gone there if it wasn't something seriously important. So you might send him an email. I don't know that it's important to go to a board meeting. I asked Stephen if I should send him an email, and he said you could, but he felt like it wasn't 100% necessary. And I am hoping, how about this? If I don't hear by the end of the week and I send you an email, then we can press it.
That's good. Thank you. Cameron?
Boy, I'll tell you what. I've been on the internet. I get stuff for legal big lawsuits and stuff. There's got to be somebody that is going up against CenturyLink or somehow of a lawsuit. Is there any way of finding out if there's a class action lawsuit for any of these companies that said that they would provide a service and they haven't even come through? Is there any way of maybe something?
There might be, but I don't think it's worth our time because we're in such a remote area, and they do provide it in parts of it, and they're failing. I mean, we lost a fax line for 2 weeks because CenturyLink's board failed, and we had to call them almost every day to get them out there to fix the board so I could get my fax machine back at work. So I don't feel like it's worth the...
So did any of the stuff that they got and sent us, the modem or any of that kind of thing, did that help?
No.
And what about going out and buying, purchasing our own modem?
No, it's not going to help.
It's not going to help either way.
No.
I'd still like to do a class action against them and just say, hey, this is what you've cost us.
Well, you as an individual can do that.
Tim could put that in the paper. No. And that's just wrong. That's like false advertisement. Shame on me.
Well, I think it's a boundary line. I think they thought they could do it. I think it's a boundary line. Honestly, I don't think they knew at the time.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Michelle. I appreciate you working so closely with Coast.com to help see if we can find a good solution to that.
Sure. I'm still working.
All right. Item 6D, Master Plan. This is an opportunity for the board to ask questions of staff about projects that are included in the Master Plan so that we have clarification. I wanted to make sure that we had an opportunity, especially since Ray Browning will be retiring at the end of June. That we had an opportunity to ask him specific questions regarding this document. So this is the time for that. Yes, Tom?
I've only been able to find the time to go through about a third of the water master plan. So I really am not in a position, and I don't know, you know, we've had so many other things going on that I feel uncomfortable asking pertinent questions because I haven't read the whole darn thing yet. It's a pretty comprehensive document on water planning. I haven't seen the, when are we supposed to have the wastewater plan? That was supposed to be part of this too, wasn't it?
Yes, it's not coming out until fall.
How come so late?
Because they worked on one and then the other. They
no, the lateness had to do with the fact that we wanted sewer modeling done, and we wanted it done at particular times of the year so that we could include particular flows and that would be more accurate for us. The engineers or parametrics outsourced that job to another company, so the combination of the outsourcing and coordinating with the times that we wanted it delayed the project an additional 6 months.
And are they charging us for that extra time, or
no?
Is it a contract, or is it a time cost time?
The scope of work identifies those particular things. And that would not be an extra cost.
Thank you.
Cameron?
I've got some questions.
Yes.
As far as our SED charges and our flow, with that at Cape Kiwanda, with all the development that's going on down there, people have asked me of the businesses that we've got a commercial that uses very little water and is charged, you know, this amount of money on charges. Is there a breakdown of a super high flow, a medium flow of commercial properties? We break it down that way?
Yes.
I'd like to see some information as far as commercial properties like A, B, C. I mean, you can't tell me who they are, just who they are and their flow rates of what they use, because we're going to be getting into the possibility of Arts Camp. I don't know what they're going to turn that into, and the line of going into that area that it's going
to... Okay,
You've got a couple of things here. First of all, SDCs, the recommendation on SDCs will be made separately as a financial report to the master plans. And we will get recommendation on how to charge for SDCs based on that data. Every year in the budget process, we look at our rate structure and we charge customers based on the volume they use. And commercial customers get charged on the a sewer charge based on the volume they use.
No.
So I think that answers your questions.
On the sewer, not on the water?
They get charged a water charge based on what they use, and they get charged a sewer charge, but because we don't meter the sewer charge is based on the water.
Correct. Right.
Yeah.
But that's all done by volume.
That's all done by volume.
I'd like to see a comparison of what I mean, over the years, what has changed. I mean, obviously, we've kind of declined, I think, but we're going to be having, over there at the bridge, the apartment going in, and then I heard that they're going to use it as low income or whatever and change it into commercial condos. That'll change.
What are commercial condos?
Whatever, they're going to have apartments, and then they're going to change them into...
business?
Yeah.
That's just...
And then Hart's Camp, you've got all those, that property back there, those were all dory parking, and then they put trailers in there, and what size line is going into that area? I mean, are we charging them? We've got how many trailer parks?
It's by the volume. It doesn't matter what size line.
And
the
volume
is volume.
Do we charge? What about the meter size?
What does it matter?
Would it, if we had, volume. Is there a different meter size that goes into the commercial properties?
Yes, on some of them, but it's still cubic feet, no matter what size meter it is.
Not by the pipe?
No.
So then what about their SDD charges?
Well, they paid them 100 years ago. their CIC charges change by their volume. So if they're a high-end user, they pay high-end CICs for the wastewater treatment plant, but their SCCs were paid when they installed the water and sewer. So every month, if they're a high-end user by their volume, they pay the highest rate on commercial, $123.75 per month for wastewater treatment plant CICs. So it's pretty well thought out as far as structure and who pays how much. The higher the volume, the higher they pay.
Well, I've got a concern is of tap. I mean, if they're going to enlarge an area,
They may have to pay more SDCs. They may have to bring in more water and sewer lines. And if they do that, then PCJ
Well, do we have a criteria of what they have to meet to, if it expands beyond this point of how many buildings or rooms or
does
that
change
it?
It's all part of the zoning law.
Yeah.
So yes, that's all on paper, and I'm sure Michelle could walk you through it.
Oh, I could definitely walk you through that.
All right. That was another question I had.
Because I'd like to focus this discussion, if we could, on the projects and the master plan, and if people had questions about that. I know that this is important, and I don't want to leave it out, but I think that you and Michelle could walk through that.
Next week.
Ann, did you?
I did, but Tom had his hand up. Tom, go ahead.
As I mentioned earlier, I haven't had a chance to look at the entire report and individual projects, but I recall a conversation I had with the previous authority manager, and in light of recent improvements on Pequawanda Drive, he mentioned to me that the water tower on Cape Kiwanda Drive, that's our 100K tower, fed right across the street, and I believe that's Pine Street, but I'm not perfectly sure. But there was only like an inch and a half line from the tower or from the reservoir to serve that small area, of, I'm guessing about 10 houses, and there's going to be three or four more properties in that pine or park lane area. And I was wondering, in the plan, Michelle, are there plans to increase that outflow from an inch and a half line to something bigger?
It's not an inch and a half line, it's a 2-inch line. That 2-inch line comes from up above, the 100K reservoir feeds it. We have no issues with water right there. We've already got the water line going up to Park Lane. Leonard did a magnificent job of supervising the contractor to make sure all of that. We put in new valves. We're ready to roll. All we have to do is, when they're ready to build the houses, is to put in the service lines. So that is not a master plan item. But there is no 1.5-inch line. Then we have 2-inch service lines. One thing I do want to point out to all of you that haven't asked about the master plan actual improvements is that I had Leonard and Ray go through the list of the actual jobs on the master plan, and they have rearranged them. They did not whatsoever, and they've been there for over 20 years, both of them, agree with what order the facilities were going to be taken care of. So we have a new list that I have actually sent to Parametrics. I told them not to touch it. I just look at it. But we definitely have some changes in the order of the project. So this draft that you have is exactly that, a draft. We know about the reservoir rehabilitations. We want those up front. Obviously, Rupel is our main priority next. but the tank reservoirs are coming up. They want those taken care of. We need some standby power for the 300K. And there's just, and if the board would like this rearrangement of the staffs, I would be happy to send it to you.
Yes, thank you.
Please.
Please.
Good. Yep.
Yes. That, Michelle, thank you so much for that, and Leonard and Ray, too. That was my primary question, is what did the staff think about the order of the projects and
right.
and the particular projects? So I'm very grateful to you and Leonard and Ray for going through that and applying your experience and expertise to it. I have a number of things. I've read all the way through it once. I've read most of the way through it a couple times. But I kind of have some little minor things. For example, I don't think there are two dairies in our community anymore. I think there's only one. That's very minor. But and then I have some larger issues like questions about the map. I don't think from my experience with land use and the zoning in the community and with community development and all that, I'm not convinced that this map is correct as it's annotated. I think that yellow line is the community boundary, not the authority boundary, and they do not match in all regards.
Right.
So I've got several other little things. So my question to you is, and maybe this would be something that all of the board members could do, is as you go through it, could I make this list of questions and send that list to you?
Oh,
you
please.
You can either address them yourself, or you can take them to the engineers and incorporate them in a revised draft.
Yeah, because this is the draft. Yes, thank you very much. I would definitely appreciate that. I've noticed a few things as well, but I'm seriously right now focused on the money, obviously, because of budget. And the projects themselves and the order that they're going to be in. But you're right, there are a lot of minor issues in the writing, and I didn't want to get into population and those things right now. We have time for that. But as soon as, if anybody would love to send Anne a question, she could compile them and then send them to the office. We would be happy to take those on.
Oh, okay. You want them to send them to me, and then I send them to
you? Thank you.
I thought maybe we could all send our own questions to you.
I was hoping you volunteered to put them all together.
Yeah. I will die. Juan has a reaction.
John? Your mic?
Yeah, sorry. I had to leave it while I swore. I apologize, Michelle. I think that we've got to send this stuff to you individually. I worry about the idea. I know. I'm sorry. I know Anne is dying to volunteer, but I just think some of the complexities on this stuff, I think that's a huge burden to put on her, and I think we've got to send this stuff directly to you. I'm sorry.
That's fine. I'll take it.
I do think it's more appropriate that it go to the manager. Yeah.
Thank you.
It's not just a matter of my time, but it's a matter of interpretation of what's being said and the dialogue that might take place or need to take place to make sure that you clearly understand the person's questions or concerns. So it's not that I don't want to do the work. I just think it would be a better process if we sent them to you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And
good try, Sarah.
I have at least one question or one comment, and I think one of my concerns is under the service area description on what's titled is probably page 2-1. There is discussion of, it says passage of an ordinance amendment by the PCJWSA board would allow the authority to serve customers outside the service boundary. I have a problem with that being in there unless we explain exactly what an ordinance means and what that process is, because I'm afraid people are going to think that this board
wants to change the boundary, and this board doesn't change boundaries.
Which
it is
like,
a public process.
And I'll take care of it.
Yeah, okay. The other thing with regards to the mapping, I had the same concerns that Ann did, and I'm hoping that to prevent this in the future, because we had this issue with the last set of plans, that we get an appendix included that is a description of our legal boundary so that the engineers are very well aware of what it is and is not, because this is a major error if we were to put this out to the public, because it doesn't show our actual real boundary, in my opinion. And in addition to that, they have here a Pacific City Limits boundary on the map, which is,
I thought that was not appropriate at all.
And they continue to refer to things as a city reservoir and a city this, a city that. And that's just not, they've been instructed before, and that those things need to be fixed.
I'll take care of it.
Okay. Are there any projects in here with which the staff has any concerns about how it's laid out or how it's described, and would like the board to be aware of that information?
No, I don't think so. We went through all of the facility improvements. We went through the pipe upgrades. We are talking to them about the one that we are talking about is the seismic upgrades, the backbone pipe. So we're talking to them about that, but that's also in far in the future, but we want to get it right this time as far as details. I think pretty much we have a really good, better understanding of these projects than they do, for sure. So we know what they entail. We've talked about them in detail, and Leonard and Ray both, we talk about, it's not that we talk about them in a meeting, we talk about them almost daily, in that we want to get, make sure we get them right, and that Ray has retyped this list with the minor corrections maybe three times, and he, I don't want to embarrass him, but he's learning new software that he never knew before, so he's done a marvelous job.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ray.
Yes, Sean?
Thank you. Michelle, I'll give you some detailed responses, but I do have some general stuff. And like Tom, I have been through this a couple of times, but nowhere near the number of times that I would like to. First of all, just as a kind of funny question, do we really have a transmission line from Horn Creek that's 212 inches in diameter? That's a 17-foot transmission line. If we do, I'd like to take a tour of it, please.
You're not correct. No, I do not have a transmission line that's big. That'll be taken care of. Any other questions you might have, Sean?
Yeah, some of this stuff I think is probably better just via email, but when it's talking about water demand on page 3.2, it's talking about peaking factor, and I'm curious as to where that data came from. Is a peaking factor something that they derived? Did we derive it? Does it come from some standard engineering formula?
They derived it from information that we supplied to them. So we are questioning everything in that, but we do give them peak information as far as we give them daily flow rates.
Okay, thank you. A lot of my questions and concerns are regarding the seismic information, and I'm a little bit concerned that the seismic information is kind of based on time between subduction zone events, and I assume that that is in a, is a sort of a de facto equivalent of magnitude in some way. But what I worry about is that in a true, you know, Cascadia subduction zone event, I don't know that any upgrade is going to matter. I mean, I think all this stuff is going to break no matter what. So I have some serious questions about spending this kind of money on some things if it's not going to survive a 9.0 earthquake anyway.
That's exactly our question. Why are we doing it? Because the only thing I can see happening is that we maybe want to upgrade the reservoirs to protect water in case of an emergency, but upgrading some of these, what they call backbones, which I'm still not clear of, I don't think they'll be alive. I don't think
they'll be alive.
So yeah, we are talking about that. I agree with you wholeheartedly on the seismic upgrades. That is a very long conversation that I'm going to have with them, along with Leonard and Ray. I'm not going to do this alone. This is not my forte, so be aware that they will be 100% involved in this project. The only ones that I can talk about that I know for sure are facility improvements and pipe upgrades. These I know.
Yeah, and thank you, by the way, and please pass on my thanks to Leonard and Ray. I think that's fantastic that they have different opinions as to the ordering of these projects, and that was definitely one of my questions. So please pass my thanks on to them.
I'm listening to you right now.
Okay, good. Well, thank you, gentlemen. One of the questions I have is the upgrade to Horn Creek at, you know, the $1.358 million. And I understand where that comes from, but just as a sort of throw a cog in the wheel there, you know, is that something that could be, could an alternate to that be some sort of a conservation program or finding a way to reduce water consumption as opposed to expanding the Horn Creek facility itself? Just a thought process.
No, I understand. The only project I'm aware of right now is adding another membrane system. We do, for our water rights in the next 3 years, have to be able to produce a certain amount of water to protect those water rights. I will give you more information on that, but there is no 1.3. We are talking about a 125 and... I think it's more like a $400,000 project. So I will research that for you, Sean, but there's no intent of a $1.2 million.
Isn't there going to be more government money available to rural areas for their water?
Cameron, could you hang on? Tom had his hand up.
I wouldn't mind finishing before we move on.
Sorry about that.
No, that's okay. But I get that, I do, and I appreciate that on that, bringing that skid in to Horn Creek. But I worry a little bit about having to spend money in order to justify that we're using more water when we're not really using more water, although we might need to in the future just in order to guarantee a water right. I mean, that train of thought worries me a little bit.
That's a perfect worry. I understand it. I've listened to it for 20 years. Never quite followed it, but it's something we have to think about, and we have to make a decision, and that's you, the board. We'll have to make that decision. And
you bet.
The more information I get for you, the better off we're going to be. So.
You bet. I agree. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it. Okay, so then I think I'll close for now with... On 6-9, this was regarding pipeline construction. A couple of things I highlighted. One, a 10% markup was added for contractor mobilization overhead and profit. I mean, that doesn't seem like a very big number for a contractor to make any money, especially when you consider that engineering costs were estimated to be 25% of the construction cost. I thought that was really... a nice pat on the back for Parametrics to include themselves a 25% construction cost bonus on their work. So those two things worried me.
Okay, I will bring that up.
Thank you. That's all I had for now.
Tom? I did read on first part of the master plan in reference to Horn Creek, and that extra skid, if I read that correctly and my memory serves, would literally double our output from 600 gallons a minute to 1,200. Did I read that correctly?
I don't think that's quite correct. I do know that they want to go, I think they want to go to 1.2, but I don't think that skid's going to bring them there. We already have two skids right now. Can I get back to you on that, Tom?
Yes, thank you.
Bryn, you're up.
Excuse me?
You're up. You had a question?
Yeah, I heard recently that Biden is, there's going to be more government funding for rural areas for water and sewer and stuff, and hopefully that we're going to be able to tap into that for some of these monies and stuff.
Soon as I know anything about the actual funding, which has not been passed by the federal government, I will let you know. There's still some arguments in Washington, D.C., and I'm watching it every single day, believe me. I'm going to tap into as much as we can get.
My concern of adding another skid, since we're talking about that, if we do that, and I brought this up before, and Carolyn wasn't really thrilled with me, but if we brought in another skid, I'd sure like to see that we reach out to our neighbors to the north and maybe join us to help offset some of these prices for our water rights and to continue more of our water rights.
Excuse me.
I know that Tony wasn't in favor of us doing that.
Oh, that's a board decision.
Right. But I would like to see, if we go with another skid, I'd sure like to have our neighbors to the north of us possibility look on expanding our water area moving forward.
Well, that'll be a discussion you guys have.
And that isn't a board decision because it does change our boundaries. So it's a community decision of voters within our district. And in order to prepare for a change in an ordinance like that, we would have to weigh the costs and the benefits, and it would require quite a study before we even went down that road.
Well, yeah, we had talked about it before, but I'm sure that they'd probably be willing to kick in to get better water service. That 1,000 trails and so anyway.
It's,
just thought I'd throw it out there.
Yep.
Hot salad.
Any other questions for staff about the report? Michelle, I have one more. With regards to the scope of plan, item 8 on the scope was the review of financing options, and I'm assuming that the report from the financial analysis that addresses the SDC issue is one piece, but I thought that as part of the scope that there was going to be an analysis of where we might find money given who we were and so forth.
I believe that's coming. I think it was a separate issue. I know it's part of the scope of work, but I think it was a separate item that they were working on after they got a compilation of all the projects in the right order. So,
gotcha. And they may also wait until the wastewater plan is in also and do that at the same time? Okay.
Yeah, because it'll go for year by year by year on what projects. So it's not something they could do at this time. And if I remember correctly, in 2009, when we did the upgrade to the master plan, I spent about 3 months analyzing the rates and customer billings to get them numbers that we were charging. and it was part of that process. So it is, it would be a long process for that.
All right. And then one more thing just occurred to me that I do want to share with the rest of the board and the staff. When they talk about our capacity to produce water, and they talk about our wells running at 100 gallons per minute, my understanding is we don't run those wells 24/7 at that rate, and that we are very careful, especially with the spit wells, so that we don't get salt intrusion. So when the engineers estimate our ability to produce a certain number of water based on what the capacity is, that number may be really higher than what we can actually do.
Well, are we going to have enough tank storage for all this if we did pump up our water volume?
Well, in the master plan, there's another 200,000 gallon reservoir in the master plan, so no.
Oh, where are we going to put that bad boy?
Your backyard.
Right up, right on. Between me and Ann.
Any other questions for staff? All right, this is a good start on the discussion. Board members will get questions and comments to the authority manager for the next review on this master plan, and we'll put it back on the agenda for next month so we can go to the next step. Item 7, new business. Resolution 2101 for the agent of record. As you'll recall, we passed a motion, I believe, on this issue, but we needed a resolution, and Michelle caught that and has supplied us with the appropriate paperwork. So I will need, are there any questions on resolution 21.01? And I can't find my copy.
You want a motion, I assume?
Yes.
Now, were we all in agreement on the under the 10,000, yeah, 10,000?
We're
over
looking
10,
at the agent.
That's the next motion.
Ann,
you want to make a motion?
Sure. I will move that we approve resolution number 21-01 in the matter of designating an agent of record and designating registered office.
I'll second.
It has been moved and seconded that we approve resolution 21.01 in the matter of an agent of record and designating a registered, what was the other word? Because I don't have a registered office. All in favor of said resolution? Say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Tom? Resolution passes unanimously. Thank you. Item 7B, resolution 2102, public contracting and purchasing policy. Comments and discussion? Cameron?
Yeah, were we all in agreement on the amounts on that? I remember we talked about that at the end.
Do you have a concern?
Well, I'd like to see it. The price of, I mean, stuff has gone way up. Yeah. We'll just leave it.
Any other comments? Ann?
Hearing none, I'll move that we adopt resolution number 21-02 in the matter of adopting public contracting and purchasing policy and procedures.
I'll second.
It has been moved and seconded that we approve resolution number 2102 in the matter of adopting public contracting and purchasing policy and procedures. All in favor, say aye.
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 Thank you. The motion to adopt resolution 2102 passes unanimously. All right. Item 7C, parliamentary procedures. We have a couple of issues, a couple of things for discussion underneath this. You received in your packet the resolution 1703, which is the SDAO, it includes the SDAO recommendation on board members and responsibilities, and it's passed as PCJWSA, board member duties and responsibilities. You received resolution 1801, which talks about the limitation of board member authority, and you received resolution 1905, which talks about the board member votes of its abstention. With regards to those three items, there is information within those documents that talks about running meetings and what we have decided already for the authority. You also received the book that Michelle got us to, that are great ideas for reference at this point. At this point, though, the PCJWSA board has not adopted Robert's Rules of Order in terms of running their meetings, and SDAO has advice on that also. Let's open it for board discussion in terms of what particular issues are there and are of concern.
Well, like we had where the chair can second. No, that was a problem. And where it comes out in this book, Sean and I had a conversation on small boards and stuff. I think we should adopt at least the policies of small boards and how, as far as Robert's Rules of Order. I had purchased this book myself prior to Rochelle giving it to me, so I had sent the one back in the big book. I thought, before I became a member, that you guys had already had a policy as far as adoption, that you were running your meetings.
If that's directed toward me, we do not have a set, an individual and different set of rules governing our meetings. The advice from SDAO is not to adopt Robert's Rules of Order because they are much more formal and they are set for larger groups. I'm sorry?
The yellow book, it does talk about smaller boards.
It does talk about that, but SDAO has advised that we don't. And within the document that was sent to you, there also is a section with regards to your direct question in terms of a president or a chair and what they can do and can't do. And it says that they have the same right as other members of the board to discuss and to vote on questions before the board.
I don't have those documents.
You don't have the documents that were part of the board packet?
No, I don't. That's probably the one that I missed out on, Rochelle.
It should have been in that envelope that you received the board packet in.
I didn't understand what Rochelle said.
Sorry, it was in the envelope that I sent the board packet in.
We'll get it from you later, Rochelle.
I know Rochelle sent out a revised email with stuff that had been missing prior based on the first email. But if I could make a suggestion, I read through all this stuff again, and I'm not gonna blow smoke up your you know what and tell you that I read all those books that we just got, but I did go through some of it, and here's kind of what I suggest. I do like the idea that SDAO recommends that we do not adopt Robert's Rules of Order, because I do agree that Robert's Rules of Order is fairly formal. And it applies much better to larger groups than it does to small groups. However, where I do think the Robert's Rules of Order is appropriate is I think it does a pretty good job of trying to outline things like transparency and wanting to make sure that proper procedures are followed to make sure that make sure that bodies err on the side of being as open and as respectful as possible. And so what I would recommend is if individual board members have concerns about things that we are doing as a board, that we can always offer suggestions and we can always add an official policy if we run into conflict with something. I think it's problematic to adopt Robert's Rules of Order because we're such a small board and we can get into some of these circular firing squad things if we constantly have to remove ourselves from offices in order to vote on something. But I also think that we need to be transparent. And so I like the way that we've been doing things, but if a board member has a problem with something, I think we're always free to suggest an alternative. And we could suggest a policy change or a formality to make sure that we're transparent with our community, and we could always adopt that. But I think that just straight up adopting Robert's Rules of Order is problematic for me.
Well, you know, since we started doing the Robert's Rules of the meeting of the five people on the board, and we had this once before where the chairperson could make a motion, but I think now that I read in there that the chair has to step down to make the motion, turn it over to the vice chair. But if I read it right, I mean, we've done this before where Carolyn has done that. So we set a precedent of doing that. Therefore, I think we should follow through of doing that. You know, one day you will
make
this
call. Can you recall when I needed to make a motion?
Excuse me?
Can you help me recall when I needed to make a motion?
Just a couple weeks ago.
No, I was saying I need a motion. I have not made a motion since I've been chair.
Seconding a motion.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. But I think since we've gone down that road, that we should continue the same. Do it one day this way and one day the next. That doesn't fly. Consistency. If this is how we choose to do it, then this is how we should do it.
I think we have been consistent. As your chair, I have not made a motion, to my knowledge, that I can remember, and I have only twice seconded a motion. And so I try to refrain from being out of the process unless it's critical that a voice that hasn't been heard is heard.
Right, and by this, the yellow book, it says that you can, but there is a way that you do it, that you turn over your chair to the vice.
If you're going to make a motion.
Yes.
And I don't see a need that I would need to make a motion.
But if we go down this road, once we start a precedent, that's the way it's going to be.
If I think what happens is that if we want to change our current, the current resolution, we included in 2017, an item in that resolution saying that this was what we were going to follow until we changed the resolution. And so
I think that way of being clear and transparent is that when we change anything that's in there or we find something that we need to add to it, that we then formulate a resolution and add that in.
Okay.
And we've done that twice since. So as we're reviewing, I think it's a good practice, and I appreciate you bringing this up, that we have copies of Robert's Rules of Order, and we're a little more aware of and reminded of procedures, that we, that's a good reminder for us. It's good that the community knew that we're paying attention to the transparency and everything that goes with it, and that we have resolutions in place, that we're open to amending those resolutions when we believe as a group that that needs to be done, and that we will, anything that is brought forward with this group, we will take a look at it and review it and then add it to it. And in the meantime, we have some great resources that will continue to educate us.
Radio.
Right. So we're good at this point, and if additional things come up, we will certainly continue to work on them. Item 8, guest questions and comments. Yes, Michelle.
Hello. Yes, I'm afraid that I'm going to talk when I shouldn't, and I can't talk when I want to. We did have an email come in from a customer, and I'm going to read it to you. The reason I didn't send it to you is it has their name and all the pertinent things that we don't want you to know. It says, "Hi, Michelle. Being a longtime homeowner in Pacific City, I would like to make a formal request to rescind the excessive CIC charge applied to rental homes. I have documentation that every year my house is empty at least half of the days, and the increase in the CIC charge for rental home owners over residents is unwarranted. Please let me know who I can raise this question with, or if speaking at a board meeting is required. Thank you. We love our Pacific City home, but cannot fathom how this policy is justified." So I replied to the customer saying that right now with COVID, that the best way is for me to read the email to the board of directors and that I would respond to her. This is a question that's come up before.
Are you finished, Michelle, or do you want to explain?
I am. I'm finished. I mean, this is part of the wastewater treatment plant, $51 a month that we charge vacation rentals. We have been charging them for the last couple of years, and we've had complaints before, not many, but we've had a few.
John and then Tom.
I guess first, I'm curious, since this is a guest comment, why it has to be anonymous. If we were in a public meeting, we would know who was asking the question. So I'm curious as to why this is different.
That's a good question. If the board agrees, I can tell you who it is. Don't know if you know them, but...
Or forward us the email.
But I was told that any guest questions were to be emailed to us and we would bring it to the board. So if I've done that wrong, let me know and I'll correct this. But I can certainly.
No, I'm not saying you did it wrong. I think for, you know, if we're taking this as if we're basically doing a normal board meeting, but it's just online. Right? I mean, if there was a guest question, we would know who that person is. I think it's important to stick with that.
Okay.
So, but then I'll comment on the context of the email. You know, you're absolutely right. This is something that we have discussed before, and you and I spent a great deal of time trying to come up with, you know, a more appropriate way of coming up with some of these fees. And, you know, we made the decision after lots and lots and lots of work that vacation rentals were worthy of having extra charges. I mean, they're putting extra burden on the system. They should have extra charges.
And it's not the board's fault that she doesn't rent it out half the year.
Correct.
Tom?
I'm at a loss here. Michelle, would you send me a copy of our current charges? I'd be interested to know how many approximately how many rental units are there in or those kind of units are in our district?
Very few in overall. The last time I counted, I think it was 189, but Rochelle, correct me, is it more like 225, or is it still 189?
That's cool.
Around there, or 220? You can raise your fingers.
Okay, well,
it's very small. It's about 10%, maybe 12% of all the homes.
Okay, well, my question has to do with fairness, and they are a commercial type business, and I kind of understand that basic concept, but I'd like to know whether these rental homes produce more affluent or demand more use of our water supply.
We did an exhaustive research analysis of how much more the rental facilities were using in water and sewer, and it was unbelievable, the difference. And it's not everybody, obviously. It's not
talking about. Are we talking about 20% more than a normal home?
Oh no, we're talking 20% or no, and sometimes 4,000%. Depends on if it's on Ocean Drive or if it's on. It depends on where it is in the city, town.
I would make a suggestion then for this kind of query that we point out to the customer that this is why we did that, that we did do a study and just point that out, and that it's a 20% increase or what we discovered then when we made this policy, and that's why there are additional charges.
We've done that for years, and they still think that we're cheating them.
Cameron?
My question is, how many of these vacation rentals that we know of, and how many are out there that we don't know of?
Irrelevant.
I mean, there's people that will come forth and say, yes, we're doing a vacation rental, but how many people do they have here that still rent their house?
Well, since the Tillamook County put in the vacation rental rule, we discovered many, many more because they have to be licensed. If they're not licensed and they're just doing it on their own privately, we never know. But if they are going through a facility, like any one of the vacation rental facilities that rent them out for them, VRBO, I mean, there's many. We have figured out every one of them, pretty much. Because they're licensed through Tillamook County, and we get a copy every single year of every single vacation rental that is licensed through them, that has gone through their organization, and we verify that with our customer list. And we take off people that quit, and we put on people that have, that struck, that signed up.
And if you have suspicion that someone has got a short-term rental and it's may or may not be licensed, you just give the county office a call and they'll take care of it.
Yep.
Because it is an ordinance now, and people are required to have a license in order to rent their homes.
But we only check it once a year.
Yes. And?
Yeah, you call the community development office. They have the short-term vacation rental administration piece within their office, and you can call and inquire if you have a building or a house that you think is being used as a vacation rental. You can call and inquire as to whether or not they are licensed.
As for Joni.
And also, the county has software that they installed a year or two, maybe more, ago that scours the internet looking for advertisements for vacation rentals by keywords, including streets, I think, and cities and towns and everything else. So since they installed that software, they have found a few more that weren't going through some of the larger business organizations as well. So I think you should call community development if there is a place you think is being used that way. They are required to have notices in the window or on the premises. Somehow I'm not sure of all the details of who to contact in case of an issue or problem. So that's one of the reasons why when you travel around town, you see a lot of vacation rental business signs on houses, and because that is a requirement of the licensing.
It sounds at this point that we appreciate the customer's input, and we'll keep that in consideration as we when we look at those numbers again. But at this point in time, the CIC chargers were put in place after a thorough analysis.
Carolyn, can I just add one more question? Back to the original question of who the person is, I will say that, I'm hearing what Sean's saying about if we were in a public meeting physically in our conference room, that person would be asked to identify themselves, and that would be part of the record. I think we're all kind of feeling our way through this, and our instinct is to protect the identity of not discuss customer business by name, but I think this instance is a little bit different because it is a public meeting and it's public comment. And so I think it would be appropriate, and it has been done at the county level in meetings when there's public comment that the person's name is given as part of the meeting.
Well, it's no different than putting a phone number in.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I'll send you a copy of the email.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Item 9, director comments. It's been a long meeting. Oh, wait, Sean, go ahead.
I'd just like to say twice in the last week or two, I have seen two PCJWSA employees traveling in the same vehicle, and both times, both employees were wearing masks inside the vehicle. So thank you very, very much.
Yay! And we've got Ray, Leonard, and Rochelle, and Michelle here with us, but please, at your first opportunity, at your next staff meeting, or however you're conducting things these days, please convey our appreciation and our thanks for everything everybody is doing on the staff. And I wanted to go back to, because we kind of passed over the personnel part of the manager report. There was a note in there about Jeb taking a class for the water. I'm trying to get it in front of me, and I don't have it in front of me, but it was a small water systems class or something like that. And that is an important thing for us to know about and point out, and please give Jeb a pat on the back for doing that. And Leonard, we hope you're Wastewater 3 class is going well.
Yeah, we know Leonard's studying hard for that, so thank you, Leonard.
Good job, team.
Thank you. All right. On that note, it is 7:29, and unless there's any objections, I will adjourn our meeting, and I will see you in 2 weeks.
All possible. Is there any way that we could change June's meeting
to a Wednesday or a Thursday?
I don't, isn't that a meeting where we discuss something about the budget?
Yeah, get to it.
I think the budget adoption is the 22nd, but I think there's something with that meeting. It's a budget hearing, so we have a budget hearing that day, Cameron, and we can't change the budget schedule at this point.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of hard because I'm going to be out of town. So, you know.
Maybe you can go in by telephone.
I'm going to be back east. So I'll probably take my laptop, see what the hotel can help me set up with that. But getting my packet's going to be challenging. So hopefully
maybe the hotel can print it for you.
Yeah, and I talked to Rochelle about it, and so yeah.
I'm sorry, but I think we're pretty set because of the budget schedule.
Yeah. All right.
And if you can't get set up, maybe you can communicate to another board member any concerns or ideas that you have.
Right.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, everybody.
All right.
Thank you, everybody. Good night.
Bye, everybody.